Council.
At St. Louis Bread Company, try the Mediterranean Wild Salmon Couscous Salad, topped with tender wild sockeye salmon fillets. Available at participating St. Louis Bread Company bakery cafes.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side.
What's going on?
Oh, it's Jerry Lewis Jr. He's just come forward. Nobody knew he existed. He comes forward now and says he's the son of Jerry Lewis.
Wow.
And he's got the documents to prove it. Sounds like him.
Yeah, he does.
I can see you right now in the kitchen, bending over a hot stove. But I can't see the stove.
Is that a fat joke?
I think so.
I think that's somebody's way of saying somebody's butt's too big.
Okay, thank you, Jerry.
Jerry Lewis Jr.
JLJ.
Yeah, at least that's who he says he is. Good afternoon. Welcome to the large morning show in the afternoon, the most successful radio show in the history of St. Louis Radio. I don't have any proof of that. I'm just, that's what I think. I think it is. I'd like to think that. Oh, man, we got a couple of pretty interesting stories in the news that we can kick around today. And then one that's not really a news story. It's just a story that caught my attention this morning. It's kind of one of those sidebar, and in lighter news, and it was on a national, news network station. But, wow, what a great story. And I will share it with you after I troll the room to see if there's any Burke segment material. Do you guys have anything?
I do. I have one thing.
All right. Saying I do, just as he did at his wedding in Jamaica.
It was Mexico, right?
I'm sorry, Mexico.
Mexico. That's right. I'll never forget
all
that.
All white beaches look the same to me. I get all these places confused. As long as the water is clear and turquoise and the sand is white, hey, they're all the same.
Puerto Vallarta.
Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, scene of his wedding where he also said I do. I give you Eon the Peon. What do you have, Peon?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Saw this blog today, and I thought it was kind of funny. This guy, I think it's the guy that started it. It's used to be a Pizza Hut .blogspot.com. And so it's Pizza Hut used to be only in those buildings, with the red roof and the and it was
right.
A very unique roof they would do where it would have the bump in the middle. And
right.
But Pizza Hut has gone away. You can't find hardly any Pizza Huts in those buildings anymore. Usually they're like in a strip mall now. And, they're connected with Wing Street. I think that's their chicken wing division.
Listen to Mr. Corporate International Franchise.
Wow.
Well,
knowledgeable man.
But this guy has, people all over the country send him photographs of these businesses that are now in the old, because they didn't tear a lot of those down. You can drive by and see, that used to be a Pizza Hut. So essentially his whole website is just businesses that are now in old Pizza Hut buildings, like one's this is an auto sales place in Atlanta, one's an Ethiopian restaurant in Omaha, Nebraska. So it's just funny to see how
What a smart thing to do, though, when you're trying to establish yourself. Obviously, they don't need to do it now, but when you're trying to get established and recognized, to have a real identifiable, from 2 miles away, you go, hey, there's a Pizza Hut.
That was their logo, too. It was that red roof, I think, behind their, with the Pizza Hut wording
smart.
On it. Yeah.
Very smart.
So it's kind of I'll put it on the Facebook page. It's kind of a fun thing to look at all those old buildings. That used to be a Pizza Hut.
Anything else?
Nope, that was it.
Dan, do you have anything?
Nothing.
All right, let's close it out. Brief, but informative. The Burke segment is officially closed. I'll tell you something. McDonald's, the Golden Arches, can you think of any single fast food name that has anything that comes close to the recognizability, if that's such a word, as those Golden Arches are.
Not fast food, no.
No. I mean, you can
be on worldwide.
You can be on the interstate, and all you need to see is the two Golden Arches. And boom, you know exactly what it is. I don't think anybody has anything like that. And it's just, it's real smart because you could put them anywhere. You could put them in a mall. You could put them in a freestanding building. You don't, like Pizza Hut used to have their own building. I mean, it's two arches. And I don't know that the arches have any real significance because, it makes an M, okay?
Right.
But other than that, and I wonder if the guy way, way, way back when who sat down and drew that,
graphic designer.
Yeah, wonder if he ever really was compensated. The answer is probably no, because it wouldn't be till years later that you realize the value of that thing. I think they ought to track down the great-grandkids. It'd actually probably just be grandkids of that guy, and write him a big fat check if I were McDonald's.
Let me see if I can find
your grandpa designed the Golden Arches thing, and now we realize how valuable that is. Here's $10 million. For your family.
Richard McDonald sketched the first yellow arches.
So he was one of the original McDonald brothers that Ray Kroc bought the name from.
Yeah, it said the arches were introduced in 1953 when Richard and Maurice McDonald were building their first franchise outlet in Phoenix, Arizona.
So Kroc was smart. He didn't mess with what they'd already done, which was the Golden Arches. Now, how come we don't see much of Ronald McDonald anymore? Do you notice that? That we used to see Ronald McDonald a lot?
Not in commercials, but some of the restaurants will have like a porcelain, you know, a statue.
But why don't we see him on TV like we used to? I mean, he used to be on all the time.
Yeah.
Ronald McDonald. And it was commercials or some charity thing. I don't see him anymore.
I guess they didn't want to just appeal to kids.
Or maybe it's because in the last few years they've recognized the fact that clowns scare kids.
Yeah, he was a little creepy looking. That's for sure.
I have a clown story today that we'll get to later. So
I just looked up. Guess what? Guess how many McDonald's restaurants around the world?
All right, I'm going to guess 3,000.
3,000 around the world?
Yeah, Dan, what do you think?
Oh, I would say, right around 3,000, 3,500.
33,000.
What?
Wow.
I thought that was low.
Oh, 33,000.
Yeah, 33,000 around the world in 118 countries. In the United States, there are more than 14,000. So there's more around the world than in the U.S.
And I guess we could ask somebody to call who has ever looked into buying a McDonald's franchise. I wonder what now it costs. Because I'm telling you, man, years ago, it was already up to like $500,000 or $750,000, just the franchise fee. And then I don't know how it shakes out, like, you know, what percentage you give them or any of that. But I'll bet you it's $1 million.
Have you ever seen all the different menu items they have in the McDonald's
other countries?
Around the world?
Yeah.
It's amazing to see that. It, you know, usually it's something local that people like to eat there. They put in, depending on what region it's in.
I'll tell you how we could start today if you want to, and I'd love to hear from, and I know we have pilots who listen. Like, I'm a pilot. Once you're a pilot, you're always a pilot. Because somebody will say, are you still a pilot? Well, if you ever took lessons and got a license, you don't lose your license. You just have to get checked out and signed off if you haven't flown for a while. But this Southwest thing, I got to tell you something. When I flew a lot, and I flew quite a bit, I have not landed at the wrong airport, but I have been on the final approach about to land on the wrong airport. And I'll tell you where it was. It was on a trip to Gulf Shores, Alabama. And as I got down there close, there were three or four airports literally all within 3-4 miles of each other. And the runway heading was the same, and it was kind of confusing. And you tell the air traffic controller, I have the airport in sight, which I thought I did, and I had another one in sight. And then before I landed, I realized what I'd done. You'd pour the power to it. You'd get back up in the air, and you go over to the right airport. And it's embarrassing. But how do two pilots do this? How do you do this? You know, the whole point of having a co-pilot is to sort of, it's a check and balance kind of thing.
Have your back.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I guess what had to happen here is one of the guys was preoccupied, doodling, or he thought, okay, well, there's the airport. And he didn't question whether or not it was the right airport. He just kind of turned it over to the pilot. You got it, take it, land it. I don't know. How embarrassing for Southwest, and I wonder what's going to happen to these two guys, because there really, I don't think, is a good excuse for this. I don't think you can come in and go, well, let me explain why we did that and why this happened. I'd like to hear what that is.
Those airports are pretty close together, aren't they?
Oh, they're 7 miles apart.
Yeah.
Which is not that close together.
But yeah. They showed, on CNN yesterday, the Google Earth images, and the size of the airports, it was not
totally
even close.
One runway is twice the length of the other.
Easily, yeah.
And 3,700 feet or whatever it was is a really small. I've landed at that airport that they landed on. I can't believe that the guy, he had to just burn the brakes completely out on that thing.
Yeah.
And people had to be pitched forward, and if they hadn't had their seatbelts on, they'd have gone flying three rows ahead of them. That's a really short airport. Now taking off. Getting it out of there was a lot easier because they emptied it out. There's no weight, and it wasn't full of fuel, and boom, you're out of there. But I don't know how with two pilots, and they weren't new, young. I mean, they were veteran, I think. But I'd love to listen in when they close the door and sit these guys down and go, all right, what happened here?
Explain
what
this.
What the heck happened that you both, neither one of you, knew you're at the wrong airport? So if we have any pilots who, and certainly there are lots of pilots who know more, a lot more than I do. I'm not a commercial pilot, never have been. If you can think of a good reason that would get them reinstated and off the hook as to why that happened, please let us know. We can take some calls. It's Tuesday. Joe Hipperson joins us today. The CDs, the DVDs are out. And outside of that, we got a couple of pretty interesting stories to kick around. The one I didn't get to yesterday, and I apologize to all of you for that because we teased it, was the weird cheese story.
Oh, yeah.
Cheese.
And that's right, yeah. Red Boy. And I was going to do it in the Playhouse, but it's a story you don't want to just gloss over. You want to take the time to try to analyze why this weirdo did what he did with a slice of cheese. And we'll get to that today. In the meantime, I see we already have a couple calls. Let's have more. Light them up, everybody. 314-969-KTRS, which is 969-5877, or toll free 888-550-KTRS. Mike is on the line. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm AM in the PM.
Thank you very much.
Hallelujah. All right, with Ronald McDonald, the reason why they don't do him anymore, it's the same reason why you never see Captain Crunch or Toucan Sam or any of those cartoon cereal commercials. It's because of the childhood obesity. It became seriously uncool to target sugary food or fast food towards children.
Oh, man.
So hang on a minute.
The term politically correct, but that's what it is.
Okay, but Mike, how come then they couldn't use those very characters to tell kids to eat salad? I mean,
yeah, they sell salads there.
Yeah, why do away with the character as opposed to using the character to send a different message, which, by the way, I still think is stupid. If a kid wants to eat a cheeseburger, eat a cheeseburger.
Well, they did, actually. I don't know if you remember. This was a number of years ago, but they had this series of commercials where they had Ronald McDonald on the golf course with three other guys pretending to be an adult. And he was pushing the McLean Deluxe and the salads and all the healthier adult-oriented foods. And there was a big backlash because kids didn't want their character taken away from them and aimed at adults. So there was a big backlash on that, and then they just pulled them entirely.
Mike, let me ask you a question. How old are you?
I am 45.
All right. You probably just made it under the politically correct bar that was set and were able to ride a bike as a kid without a helmet. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and we had skateboards that were about half the width of today's skateboard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually...
We didn't wear seatbelts, and I used to ride in the back of the station wagon, and we had full rein over the cargo area of the station wagon, and nobody thought twice about it.
No, we call that the good old days.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to argue with anybody about the safety difference. Obviously, it's safer to have a seatbelt. Obviously, there's an advantage to having a helmet. But you know what? There's certain things that are just like freedoms, and you should have the choice to take a little bit of risk to to have the freedom of feeling what it, the wind feels like flying down the street without a helmet on your head.
And, oh, yeah.
And if I thought the only way I could ever ride a bike again would be wear one of those duck butt plastic helmets, yeah, I wouldn't ride a bike. I'd just say, no, I'll never ride again. Because what's next? A helmet in a convertible? A helmet on a wave runner or Sea-Doo on the water? What the heck? I mean, where? I don't know. It's extreme. Mike, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Bob is with us. Hello, Bob.
Good afternoon, gang.
How are
you? Hey, Bob.
AM and the PM.
Of course you are. Hallelujah. What's up?
Talking about airports, I was in the Air Force from 72 to 76. I was security police.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stationed at Utapao, Thailand, when the Vietnam was going down. And it was a B-52 base. We also had U-2 spy planes. And the KC-135 refuelers.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the refuelers, our runways there were 2 miles long. And when these things took off, I've never been to funny car races, but everybody said it's like a funny car taking off, where the ground actually shakes when this airplane takes off.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if it's classified or not.
I hope it is.
Yeah.
The guys who did the maintenance on the U-2 spy planes, they told me that from 70,000 feet, they can photograph a cigarette and tell you what brand of cigarette it is.
Whoa!
Oh, man.
That's a heck of a camera.
Yeah.
That's a great lens.
It was the most sophisticated camera in the world. But when they would come back from their missions, they would... as soon as they would hit the runway, they had a 396 El Camino that would follow it, and supposedly was telling them where his wings were because they couldn't see their wings. And then when they finally did stop, they'd pull off to the side of the runway, and their wing would just go plop into the grass. And then the guys in the El Camino would go and get that camera, and it was all about the camera. But that was very interesting.
Now, you still, though, don't have a good explanation for why two pilots could both screw up the runway, do you?
No, I have no clue about that.
All right. I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That was Bob, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Tammy. Hello, Tammy. How are you?
Oh, I have a comment about the airline pilots that kind of messed the things up with Southwest.
Go right
now, I don't know a whole lot about flying, but isn't there someone at that airport that has to give them permission to land there as well?
Well, here's the deal. It's an uncontrolled airport. There are two kinds of airports. There's controlled and uncontrolled, and most airports are uncontrolled airports, meaning some of them don't even have a tower. But what happens is when you get the airport in sight, you tell whoever the air traffic controller person is, that you have the runway in sight, and they'll say you're clear to land. And pretty much from that point, you're on your own. Now, if you tell them you have the airport in sight, they take your word for it. They don't know you're looking at the wrong airport. And quite frankly, by the time you are landing and you're that low, you may literally have no further contact because of the low altitude with the air traffic control people. You'd only be able to contact the tower if there's even a tower there.
And they wouldn't have you on a radar blip, would they?
Not that low.
That low,
once
yeah.
you get to a certain altitude and you're so low, they don't have you. They can't go, hey, you're landing at the wrong airport, because you're no longer in contact with those people.
But so they aren't even aware of what kind of plane is landing at the airport?
They're aware of the kind of plane they think is about to land at the right airport. But by the time it happens, it's too late. So in other words, if I'm, United Flight 463, you're clear to land at XYZ Airport. You repeat, you go clear to land, and that's it. You literally, at that point, within a couple of minutes, you're going to touch down. Now, keep in mind, too, that at smaller airports, the last person you're in contact with is an air traffic control person, which could be out of Atlanta, Kansas City, St. Louis. You have to have a certain altitude to talk to those people. Once you say, I have the airport in sight, and you descend, they couldn't reach you if they wanted to. You've lost contact with them. You've said, I got it, it's in front of me, I'm landing. They couldn't even come on if you're 500 feet off the ground or 300 feet and go, hey, Southwest so-and-so, you know you're landing at the wrong airport?
Right.
They couldn't do it.
I just thought maybe, like you said, that they are in contact with the air controller saying, hey, I've got the airport or whatever, the runway in sight. And I kind of thought that they would be like, okay, that's great, but aren't you a 737? You shouldn't be landing at this airport. But I guess that's not.
But when you say I have the airport in sight, they think you mean the correct airport.
Oh, I got it. Okay, having a blonde moment. Thank
No. Tammy, if I say to you, I have the airport in sight, you're going to assume that I have the right one in sight, when in fact I'm looking at the wrong runway. I'm looking at another airport, but you don't know that.
Got it.
All right, Tammy, how old are you, Tammy?
44.
Favorite age.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Have you ever read the book, 44, Give Me More? You ever read that book? No, read it. It's really good. It's about how women 44 reach their sexual peak. It's a really good book.
Awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
I'll take that away from my husband. Thanks. Right.
Thank you, Tammy.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bob is a pilot. I want to talk to Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Frank. How you doing? AM and the PM.
Thank you. Hallelujah. So help us out here. How can two guys? I kind of get it because I know that once, look, if conditions are right, it's clear, and you know the other guy's competent. Once you're on final, I sort of get how you think, well, everything's great. I can just kind of sit back and let him take it. I sort of get that. But then at the same time, I don't really get it that two guys could pull this off.
You're kind of on the right track there, the last caller, when you talked about having the airport in sight. A lot of times in these uncontrolled airports, you know, as you know, because you're a pilot, you click on the runway lighting, and once you click it so many times, the lights lit up, you go, oh, that must be the airport because I just clicked the lights.
Right.
And, you know, maybe 5 miles away, the other lights lit up, too, because...
And by the way, I'm glad you said this, because this is something very interesting that most people don't know. And it sounds archaic and like Stone Age technology, but it's still true. And Peon and Dan, I think you'll find this very interesting. If it's dark and you're going into a small airport, you actually, from the airplane, turn on the runway lights from your airplane. There's a frequency, and you activate the runway lights from, and he's right. They're all on the same frequency. So you could have turned on three sets of runway lights within 10 miles, and you think you got the right one. And it's also tough to judge or gauge the length of a runway at night from the lights, depending on the angle you are and you're looking from. But
when you first start the flight, you put in like the GPS coordinates of the airport you're landing?
Yes.
And so that was an error that they did. They put in the College of the Ozarks GPS.
Sometimes you get real comfortable, and if it's a really clear, nice,
you don't even bother with that.
No, it's not that you don't bother with it, but let's just say that it shows the airport straight ahead at 10 miles. All right. I see an airport straight ahead. I figure that must be when, in fact, the airport I need is another 7 miles past that in the same direction.
Wouldn't your plane like beep or something though?
No.
If you're landing at something that is not where you intended to.
No. You are leaving your directed
route. You would
route.
Think that that would be a.
No.
Maybe they should add that to airplanes.
Please make a U-turn.
Well, Peon's got a good point, Bob. If you loaded in the destination airport and you're on final and you're coming into the wrong airport, I mean, my goodness, even in a car on the GPS, it'll go, make an immediate U-turn.
Yes. Yeah.
That is correct.
Maybe they need to...
What it really is, it's just a red magenta line that you follow, and you follow that to the airport. Now, what usually happens is, like, I've never been down there. I've driven to Branson Airport, but I've never flown into it. So I don't know how far away they are or what the actual coordinates are or anything like that.
All I know is they're 7 miles apart.
Right. So, like you said, it might have been a nice clear night, and they thought they saw the airport. And a lot of times you can turn that stuff off, and you just fly the basic instruments all the way down.
Right.
And there's no control tower, so you think you're going where you need to go, and what I don't understand is when they got close to the runway, when you get down that close, you can tell the runway's short or long. So to continue all the way down and land on the 3,700-foot runway doesn't make much sense to me.
That does not make sense because you're right. At 2 miles out, you go, whoa, that's not long enough. And then you, as my dad used to say, you pour the coal to it. You throttle it up and you get some altitude and you go around and get to the right airport. I don't know. For two guys, okay. But for both of them to miss it, that's very unusual.
You know, it could have been a new guy flying with an old guy and says, oh, I've been down here before, that's the airport. And because there's been times when, like, well, I always have a rule. If I fly into an airport I've never been before, I always make air traffic control, vector surround for the approach. Even though I see the airport and I think it's the airport, I still have them vector me around for the approach until I'm on final, and then I say, okay, I've got the airport. That way, now I know all the visual clues. I know all the stuff, you know, spots from the city, everything else. So a mistake like that never will happen to me because I make sure.
Now, you said something that is really, really interesting, and I get it. One guy could have been the veteran, one guy the new guy. And the young guy is really reluctant a lot of times to question the senior pilot.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he's thinking, boy, I think that's the wrong airport, but he's been a pilot for 30 years, so I'm, you know, I mean, I maybe I'm screwed up here, and by the time you think it all through, it's too late. That's an actual possibility, is that he just trusted that the older guy knew what he was doing. The older guys make mistakes, too. Bob, thank you for the call.
You bet, Frank. Have a great day.
You too. I flew one time to Lake of the Ozarks with a guy, and he's dead now. He's deceased. But he was a very wealthy guy, and he'd been flying for a long time. He had a real nice plane, and I was learning to fly. I was a student pilot, and this guy was a horrible, horrible pilot. But he had a nice plane, and he had an instrument rating, and it's a thunderstorm, and we're going into this Grand Glaze Airport, Lake of the Ozarks, and I knew just enough as a student to know he was about to land on the wrong runway, the absolute opposite end that he was supposed to be landing on, which means we'd have had a tailwind, which means it would have pushed us right off the edge, we would never made it. And finally, I just said to him, it's raining, it's windy, and I don't feel good about the flight anyway. He's one of these guys that relied on autopilot everything. He wasn't really a great pilot. But again, he's been flying a long time. I'm a student. But I finally said to him, I said, are you sure this is the runway we're supposed to land? He said, what do you mean? And I said, listen to the ATIS again. Not anus,
well,
ATIS. ATIS is something you dial up that tells you the current wind, and the from that you can determine what the right runway is to land on. And he turned it on, and sure enough, he was 2 minutes away from landing on the literally the opposite end of the runway. And he just kind of shrugged it off. Oh man, I'm glad you caught that. And I thought, well, crap, so am I. I mean, it was, but again, it was one of those. He's got the plane. I don't. He's got an instrument rating. I don't. He's been flying for you. Doesn't make you a good pilot. We're going to take a quick break. We come back, take more calls. We don't care what you want to talk about. I got a great Emmett Kelly story for you that I heard this morning. Emmett Kelly, probably the most famous clown ever in the world. And he's been gone a long time. I think he died in 1979 or something. But boy, a great story caught my attention this morning. And we'll get to that and other things after we talk about pain and how nobody wants it. And how some people know how to get rid of it or manage it and other people don't. And they either live with it or they have surgery they don't need to have. Which brings me to APG, Associated Physicians Group. Now, when I speak for somebody, for a company or business, I meet them, I learn as much as I can about what they do. I don't need to know too much, because sometimes you can get so deep into something that, you know, average people don't understand it, even I don't understand it, and it's not necessary. But you meet them, and then I try to evaluate, is what they're trying to tell people true, or are they just blowing smoke? Do they know what they're doing? I got to tell you something, I don't know anything about rehab or you know, pain management, but they do. And it was so obvious to me that they were probably as good as it gets anywhere in the country when it comes to physical therapy and pain management. And I met some patients while I was there. And when I say patients, I mean people that came in regularly for rehab, and I talked to them. And then I talked to a couple of the actual rehab people, the people who stay with you while you're working your knee or your, you know, and they help you get through this. And I couldn't find anybody that I wasn't impressed with, all the way up to the people who ran and managed the place. It's under the direction of a guy named William Tom. He's an MD. He was trained at Mayo Clinic. It's just everything about it's impressive. So here's the deal. If you're in pain, knee pain, neck pain, back pain, shoulder pain, maybe you've even been told you're going to have, let's say, knee replacement surgery. You can accept that, not get that second opinion. You can be on pain medication if you want for the rest of your life, be basically a drug addict. You can have surgery that you didn't maybe need to have, or you can contact the people at APG, Associated Physicians Group. And the best way to do that is go to their start with their website, apgpain.com. They have three clinics: O'Fallon, Illinois, Swansea, Illinois, and Edwardsville, Illinois. Now, so far, what they have on the Missouri side is in Creve Coeur, behind Bristol Seafood Restaurant. They have a location where you can take part in the Alternative to Knee Replacement Program. And they have thousands of people who have avoided knee replacement who had been told that they absolutely had to have it, when in fact they didn't. APG, easy to remember if you think of All Pain Gone, and that's your goal and that's their goal. APGPain.com.
See how the highways look right now. Check in with Tim Weiland. Hi, Tim.
You know, hi, Dan. I'm sitting here listening to Frank and the callers call in. And you know, just being up in the air all the time, it kind of reminds me of our plane trying to land either at Spirit of St. Louis Airport or Creve Coeur Airport. That's the difference.
Yeah.
The runways are so short on one and long on the other.
And that's a great comparison, because wouldn't they be up in the air about 7 miles apart? I mean, not much more.
Creve Coeur and Spirit, they're very close together. Right, they are. They're just a little bit, but one is in the middle of a farm field, and the other one is there in the industrial area, but that's, I don't know. Maybe these guys are going to start a crop.
Well, here's a better look. You've been up in the air. Here's a better comparison. There's a St. Charles County Airport, and there's St. Charles Municipal Airport. They can't be more than 5 miles apart.
Yeah.
And they're both similar in that they're in the middle of the field. You know, one has two or three runways, one has one. But if you're not familiar, it's the St. Charles. There it is, St. Charles. So you got the wrong one. No.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, they're working with a disabled bus on westbound 44 after Big Bend. You have a stall also on westbound 44 before Lewis Road. Everything else is just volume getting started. You've got westbound 40 starting to get heavy between Hampton and McCausland. 270 looks good. Southbound, eastbound 270 heavy from Lindbergh to about New Florissant. And this traffic report brought to you by Office Max. If you need it for your business, you'll find it at Office Max. All at great prices. So stop by today and get right down to business. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center, Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
Next time on the Carney Show.
Hey crew, Carney here. Join us for the Wednesday show. Gabby Cabby from New York City and some Chris Christie talk, I'm sure. Also, our Johnny Law segment, Chris Breen and Snooki. I gotta say it just like that. I love her so much. It's the Wednesday edition, and it starts at 1. See you then.
The Carney Show, weekdays from 1 to 3 on the Big 550 KTRS, live and local.
Hi, this is Ken Heisey. We started Heisey Advisory Group with one thing in mind: to serve our clients well. As a fiduciary, I have a legal responsibility to work for your best interest. Call us now at 314-909-1116, and I'd be happy to give you a no-obligation consultation. If you're like most people, you've had some gains recently. Unfortunately, most people aren't aware of the fees that they've been paying on their investments, so a lot of your gains could disappear before you see them. Now is the best time to give us a call and let us help you review your portfolio. Take control of your assets and your profits. Let us help you put a plan together with only one thing in mind: you.
Call Heisey Advisory Group right now at 314-909-1116 for your no-obligation financial review. That's 314-909-1116. Or visit them at heiseadvisorygroup.com. Ken Heisey is an investment advisor representative. Investment advisory services offered through Global Financial Private Capital LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Lori Heisey is a licensed insurance representative.
Everybody loves hardwood floors, and everybody pays a premium, except if you call Boardwalk Hardwood Floors. They have pricing direct from the factory, which means lower prices for you. Boardwalk Hardwood Floors has been around well over 15 years and now have three locations in Crestwood, Manchester, and in St. Peter's. It's a locally owned and operated company, so you're not paying for national advertising. They have installation classes, and they'll teach you everything you need to know to save even more money. Better yet, if that's not your style, they'll find you somebody who will install the hardwood floors from Boardwalk Hardwood Floors, and you'll still save big. Huge selections of colors and styles in stock and always at the best price. If you're thinking about installing hardwood floors and setting off your house just right, Boardwalk Hardwood Floors is the only way to go. 314-730-3100. That's 314-730-3100 or boardwalkhardwood.com. Three locations: Crestwood, Manchester, and in St. Peter's. Locally owned and operated, Boardwalk Hardwood Floors.
Bertarelli Cutlery has been keeping St. Louis sharp since 1967 and is your one-stop shop for knife, scissor, lawn, and garden tool sharpening. If it's metal and you need it sharp, look no further than the professionals at Bertarelli Cutlery. For professional quality kitchen gear, such as Vitamix blenders, Lodge cast iron, Wusthof, and Global knives, head down to the Bertarelli Cutlery Showroom, located at 127 Marconi in the heart of the hill. They also carry great local St. Louis-made products, such as NHB knives. These knives are handmade in St. Louis and carried exclusively at Bertarelli Cutlery. They also have cutting boards made from locally sourced hardwoods, designed and produced by Martin Goebel of Goebel Furniture. So head to the Chef's Toy Store and see all the great items and deals to be found. Bertarelli Cutlery is located at 1927 Marconi in the heart of the hill. Call them at 314-664-4005 or visit them at BertarelliCutlery.com. Bertarelli Cutlery, keeping St. Louis sharp since 1967.
It's the 11th annual World's Greatest Sports Trivia Championship, Friday, February 7th at Rams Park. It's a fundraiser every year for St. Patrick's Center, and you're invited. If you have what it takes to be with the best and the brightest, this trivia night is for you. Kara Henderson-Snead and Rams GM Les Snead will host an action-packed event. Free tickets, great prizes, and a chance to be the best trivia team on the planet. Friday, February 7th at Rams Park. To find out more, sportstriviachampionship.org.
If you drive a pre-owned GM vehicle with OnStar, you've got a powerful connection to help wherever you go, but only if you activate the service. So we're giving you a chance to test drive it for 3 months at no cost or obligation. Just push the blue OnStar button and ask for 3 months on us. If you're lost or need help, we'll be there. Offer good on 2006 or newer, digitally equipped, pre-owned, and non-active GM models. Visit OnStar.com for coverage map, details, and system limitations.
For over 40 years, Metro Lighting has made a commitment of service to their customers and is proud to be locally owned and operated. Metro Lighting offers a one-year in-home product warranty on all lighting fixtures, lamps, and ceiling fans. So if something stops working, they'll repair it or replace it. Plus, Metro Lighting guarantees their prices against any competitor, including big box stores and the internet. Get the best selection on the highest quality lighting at the best price guaranteed at Metro Lighting. Visit MetroLightingCenters.com for the location nearest you.
Hi, this is Jeff Lapidus, the retirement coach. If you want to make smart choices about your retirement planning, listen to my show, Straight Talk on Retirement, this Saturday at 10 a.m. here on the Big 550 KTRS.
Wow, this is a big buildup. The show deserves this. Yeah!
From the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion in Los Angeles, California, it's the 75th annual. Isn't that what it sounds like?
Yes. Yes.
Radio Awards. Tonight, from St. Louis, Missouri, the entire cast of the Large Morning Show in the Afternoon. Also, from that same station, the one and only John Carney. And now,
it had to be.
Here's Cher. That's who this is, isn't it, Cher?
Yes.
Nicholas is on the phone. If I heard Peon correctly, Nicholas is an air traffic controller. Hello, Nicholas. How are you?
Hey, I'm retired in corporate aviation, and I was a radar air traffic controller for 6 years in approach control in Southern California.
Well, let me say this before you speak. I've been in the tower at Lambert International. I've been in two other towers. At busy airports, I don't know how you people do what you do without just going crazy.
I can tell you this, then. I've never worked in a tower. I've only worked in radar rooms.
Well, that's even harder to stay awake in, is the radar room. So what do you think happened here that two guys in the cockpit, neither one of them go, hey, I think this is the wrong airport?
Very easy. I was telling Dan that, remember, between those two guys, they have a little system called the FMS, the Flight Management System.
Okay.
Inbound to that airport, they would have dialed in the three-letter identifier for that airport. They could have very easily punched in the identifier for Graham. Everything looks good on their approach. They're talking to approach control. All systems say go for landing at the airport. They dialed in. It just could have been off one little letter.
All right, and for people who don't understand this, every airport has a three-letter identifier. For example, Spirit is S-U-S, okay? That's the Spirit identifier. What is Lambert? S-T-L, I guess?
S-T-L, yeah.
Yeah, and they all have these three letters. So what he's saying is, if there's an STQ airport near STL and you click it just one, it's going to tell you you're right on track.
You're going
right
in.
If you're on a flight in a Part 121 carrier like Southwest is, they want that computer to fly that airplane. It's more efficient.
All right, but let me ask you this.
They're putting everything in. The pilots are back up. They're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be primary, but it's just like the controllers as well. The controllers that are on approach for Branson Airport, they're going to have those satellite fields on their approach control.
Okay, but
you know as well as any other pilot, you get three things when you're cleared to land. Southwest Airlines cleared to land runway 36 left, wind, and altimeter. They
right.
should have checked that heading. They should have seen that airplane as well going to the satellite field.
Okay, two airports near each other, though, can have runways with the exact same headings. They can, but my question is...
But those two do not.
My question is, do those two airports have similar identifiers? Are the letters close to each other? I don't think they are.
Well, what it is that, let's say you're looking on your map.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Hypothetically, you just picked the wrong identifier.
You picked Branson, and you went with whatever. Yeah, okay, I got you.
Yeah, you picked the one from Graham. But the thing is, remember you have your visual reporting points?
Right.
Graham is right next to the road. Branson isn't.
So you would agree it's really, really rare for two guys to both miss it.
Absolutely. Unless they're fully, fully comfortable with that FMS system, which they should be, and they could have put in the wrong identifier, whereas everything looked good to them on their systems. One thing pilots forget to do when you're instrument rated and you're commercial and ATPs, you forget to look out the cockpit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the flight deck.
I got to tell you, I don't think these guys will work again, because I think from a PR standpoint, Southwest, to make a statement saying, we take full responsibility, this never happened again, I think they have to let them go.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple openings probably at Southwest right now. Yeah.
All right, Nicholas, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
You got it, sir. Bye.
You got it, sir.
Hmm.
Well, see, this guy,
hmm.
You can tell he may have some military background. We can hit Rich quickly, then we'll take a break and come back. Rich, how are you?
Hey, I'm in the PM.
Thank you.
Hallelujah.
What's up?
I was just curious, and maybe the guy that you just talked to sort of blow this completely out of the water. But if neither one of those pilots had ever flown into Branson before, if they're flying in, and they've already decided before they even get close, okay, we're going to Branson, a little small town in southwest Missouri.
Right.
This airport's not going to be very big. So even if they looked out the window of the aircraft, and they're looking down on this airport, and they're thinking to themselves, that runway looks pretty short, but we already know we're going into a small town, and the airport's not going to be very big. They may have just disregard the fact that it looked short from the air and figured that's where they had to go.
Well, one of the things we don't know yet is we don't know if they had flown this route before. If
right,
not,
yeah,
I
don't know if they had or not, but if either one of them has ever flown into Branson, I was thinking that could be a possibility. They might have been looking at, they may not have even seen the other airport. I would, if they're only 7 miles apart, I would imagine from the air they had to have probably seen it.
Yeah.
But if they're coming in and never been into Branson before, they might be thinking, well, this looks a little bit short, but we've never been into this airport, and we know it's a small town. The airport's not going to be very big to begin with, and they went ahead and went for it.
I think those runways are supposed to be for commercial. Aren't they, Frank, supposed to be a certain
length? Yeah.
Yeah,
and obviously the small one is not made for commercial airplane.
Yeah.
Good point, Rich. Thank you for the call.
All right, my pleasure.
All right, there goes Rich. And you know what? When we come back, I got to share something else with you. I mentioned yesterday we lost a listener, and I didn't know this guy, and Peon didn't know him, and Dan didn't know him, but we know who he was, Lynn Conan. And some amazing stuff has happened since I got the initial couple of emails that he passed away. I got a phone call from somebody who knew him. Apparently, this guy was one of those people that everybody loved. I wish now that I'd met the guy, because evidently he was just one incredible person. I'll share the story with you, the phone call I got about Lynn Conan, for anybody who knew Lynn. But what really struck me, and I mentioned this yesterday, was an email I got that said, this was a man with 100 best friends. What a powerful statement to make.
Yeah.
He was that good a friend to that many people, and I wish now that we had had a chance to meet him.
I got to talk to him several times off the air, but he was a great guy.
Well, it's I'll share the phone call with you a little later on. I won't forget about it, I promise. First Community Credit Union, that's where I bank. I wish everybody listening could know how important it is to us and how much it means to us when you go to an advertiser and you use their services and you tell them it's because of us. It absolutely is the most important thing, next to listening, obviously, to the show, that you can do. And I think sometimes people think, well, you know, if I don't go there, it's just one person. No. They track and they pay attention. Every single person that comes to them as a new customer and every business that we speak for, don't think they don't keep track of whether or not, the money is well spent. Are we getting return on our investment? So to those of you, and I know there are lots of you who have changed where you do your banking, which is a tough thing to talk people into. It's just banking. But you've bothered. It's not much of a bother, but you took the time to close your accounts out at wherever you were banking and move them to First Community. Thank you for that. And I'm going to go ahead and thank you in advance to those of you who will do it. I hope you'll think about it. It's not, earth-shattering, life-changing necessarily, but like a lot of other things, if you can go somewhere and find, as many people do, that there's a great possibility you're going to get a better rate here and there, you're going to get better service, why wouldn't you do it? I know it's just banking, but why wouldn't you go to a place where you get the best service, where they're real competitive and they're real secure and they're real stable? Think about it. Just give it some thought. We'd appreciate it. I do all my banking there, and I love the place, and I think you will too. It's a website's easy to navigate, people are easy to deal with, and they respect the fact that you, as a customer, are also their boss, because you're one of the owners. We, the members, own First Community Credit Union. FirstCommunity.com.
To the 20, to the 10, to the house!
Congratulations to Mike Kelly, the voice of the Mizzou Tigers on KTRS, for picking up yet another award. This time, he was voted Missouri Broadcaster of the Year by the National Sportscasters and Sportswriters Association. Mike Kelly, we tip our hats to you from all of us at the Big 550 KTRS. This is the Big 550 KTRS St. Louis, Baldwin, Arnold, Town and Country, and the World.
Streaming live at KTRS.com.